drifting.
Okay, go right ahead.
About 60 years ago, the office was kept with coal. We always had a good fire in the office. And an old man by the name of Roswell Smith, who was gone many years ago, he used to tell the story about the raising of the old mill. The old mill was made of large timbers, heavy timbers. It was 36 feet long, the beams were, and hewed and squared up. So there was 18 to 24 inches square, some of them. And it was very hard at the raising. He was telling me about the raising of the mill. Obadiah Sprague, was the carpenter, and he always, at the raising, he always carried a square around on his shoulder and told the rest what to do. Well, they got the bent together, just put up in four bents. They got the back bent together, ready to raise. They got all the men that was handy, hold of it. They got it up about breast high, and he would holler, all together E, and they would try it and get it up about so high, and sag back, just about breast high as they could get it. And they was getting discouraged, you see, and he says, the first man that gigs, he says, I'll cut him down to this square. He says, hang to it. Says, the first man that gigs, I'll cut him down and get some props. And somebody back behind got some props and got under it. And so they got loose. But he was concerned, for he knew if some of them let loose, it would drop back and somebody would get caught. And they got more men and more men together, and they finally got the back bent up. Then they raised that from the other bench.
They did so and so. If they didn't do so and so,
there
was something
wrong. I don't remember that. I know they told after they got it up, they had lots of good whiskey then.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't have any till after the raising.
Oh, I see. He wouldn't let them have it till they raised it.
No.
You use this
statement.
Matter
hand.
There's a lot of funny things that's happened down there that now he don't think I'll be getting.
Yeah. Maybe you could remind him of that.
Oh no, the man that he worked for when he first.
Oh, that was about 60 years ago, wasn't it?
Oh yes.
Huh?
Oh my, yes, it's been 63.
63.
When he first came here, wasn't it?
Yeah.
First, when he first came here.
That's 62.
62 or 3, you know. Yeah. But he thinks of him once in a while, but he can tell something about what this man said. The fellow he worked for when he first came here.
This Roswell Smith to tell these stories. He told me one day, he said there's an Indian burial. About 10-acre lot back of this. It lays a little bit, rolling, not bad, just putting their level. He says, you've got an Indian buried up there on your knoll. Well, I said, whereabouts? Well, he said, around the back end of your lot there. Well, I said, you know where it are? No, he said, but they say there was an Indian buried. No marker. How often was it?
Where, yeah.
Then he told me once about, what was that, I'm not telling you.
What did he do?
He was a farmer and lived up here on the side hill. That first place after you go up the hill, you know, you go over the hill, do you? That,
yeah.
Yeah, that first place on the left.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. And you used to see him when he brought his grist down?
Yes, he used to come down by a little feed, mm-hmm. have some ground.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of times he'd come down and sit down and visit in the office, I see.
Yeah.
I'm going to think what God he's telling me with.
Do you remember any of them?
Is Mr. McLaughlin the person who told you about the party line?
Yes. Would you tell us a story about the man that called up and wanted his, asked if you'd do his,
Grist?
Early in the morning?
Let's see, what was that name now? Well, Tom, Saul Dury was a man. Saul Dury. He lived over on the Apex Road between Apex and Kadoshi there. That's this side of Hancock.
Mm-hmm.
He called up one loaf to grind his grist in the morning if he got here. If he got here good seed in the morning, that's where he would. And this was his name was Dury. Saul Dury was the man that brought the auction. Well, I can't think of that man's name now. He lived over there anyway in that neighborhood. Well, Saul Dury heard him call up on the phone. And Saul didn't have horses, but he had oxen. And this other man had good team. Well, in the morning I just nicely got down to the mill, and he pulled up with the Knox team, Saul Dury did, with the grist on. And you wonder if I'd grind it? I said, yes. I says, your neighbor's coming with the grist. Well, he says, I wanted to get there and have it ground before he got here. Well, he'd started, you see, before daylight in the morning to get here with that ox team and come across the lots, come across this over Sam's Creek.
And he had heard you over the party line?
Yeah, he'd heard. Mm-hmm. And the other man come before he got away. Well, he says, you must have got up in the morning. Well, he says, I do get up mornings. Who was, Art Bunker's wife's father?
Were there ever any quarrels about who got there first or anything like that?
Oh, they might amongst themselves or something. I was grounded when they come, see?
Uh-huh.
That's all you could do.
Let them fight it out.
Yeah. Lots of times somebody handy by, or they'd give the other fellow a chance.
And the millstones had to be sharpened, did they?
Oh, yes.
You had the stone, you had the millstones.
Yeah, at that time, yeah.
And how did you sharpen them?
You ever see a mill pick?
Little hammers with little sharp.
Yeah.
Yes, we have one of those in the museum.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Sharp on both ends.
Yeah, we got it.
Nigh in the middle, yeah.
We got it over at Arena, from the mill over at Arena.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You got the handle in it, have you?
Yeah.
You got the handle in it.
Uh-huh.
Well, you rest over, of course, we always have sacks and bags around the mill, you know, filled with something for to rest your elbows on.
Mm-hmm.
And you sit right there on your knees and rest your elbows on the side of the cover and get back it. And it has to be, now the first place is furrows from the eye to the stones of the outside. You've seen the...
Yeah.
And then between those furrows is where it does the grinding.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to be, well, as plain as you can make them and not have it break out, see?
Mm-hmm.
Just a little depression all along.
And about how often did you have to do that job?
Oh, depend on if you had to do it in the fall when you got ready, you had done a good job, just as good as you could. And then after that, you didn't monkey with the furrows much, but you done the other dressing.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, the dressing is where you know the high places, some of the parts of the stone were softer than others and wire down quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had a long, what we called a stash, that we put red paint on right across. Water and, not oil paint, but just water and red Venetian paint. And drew that stash right across the stone. That stash was perfectly straight. In order to keep that straight going across the stone, it would wear, of course, and then we had an iron that was faced up, round up, perfectly square, perfectly straight, and we'd have to dress that wood once in a while, see, keep that down. Well, we'd draw that wood right across, and that would show the high places on the stone.
Oh, I see.
Then we'd take those high places, the hardest out, you see.
Uh-huh.
We'd do that a little harder and then the rest in order to keep it level.
I see. Mm-hmm. And did you have water power here all year round?
Water power, yeah.
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 And so that you could grind any time of the year you wanted to.
Any time of the year you wanted to.
Sometimes they were on streams where they had to do it. Well, this is more the mill, the sawmill, where they had to just saw in the springtime.
Yeah.
When the water was
yeah.
high. But you had plenty of water.
There was always plenty of water, so it got low. Always plenty if you kept the dam from leaking.
Mm-hmm.
You used to have to gravel it a lot, work it a lot. That way.
How many of you were there that worked at the mill?
Well, it was just myself and another man, part of the time I was alone.
Mm-hmm.
The busy season I had. And when you come to dress the stone and get them ready for winter, in the fall, a journeyman come up from the mill at the deposit. He helped. He was an old man, experienced. He'd always been in the mill business.
I've never seen the
father.
He always had a very hard
glass. Yeah.
Well,
it's a tiresome job.
It is.
Sparks and flies. Those little grooves that done the grinding was probably, well, a eighth of an inch apart, probably. And you couldn't have them too deep. If you did, they'd break out with the other two. And you had to have your take your two sharp holes out of it. It was a job to get your pitch tempered. To grind down, get thick, and then you'd have to have them tempered and grew out to blacksmith and tempered. You got to have that done.
Did you make wheat flour?
No, just buckwheat.
Buckwheat.
Used to make graham flour, but not wheat flour.
Uh-huh.
Make graham.
Yeah.
buckwheat flour, I guess, was pretty popular with Mitchell. So
oh, yeah, they all were buckwheat flour. Yeah.
They don't use buckwheat much anymore.
In our museum, we have one of those batter jugs that they used to have to keep the batter in.
Have you?
And pour.
Let it stand on the side.
That's right, yeah.
Well, I have just had this time.
Yeah.
If I think of it now, think of mixing up one of those bowls that Mother makes her in the morning, at night, so that's already in the morning. And I have the jug down for it.
But when the buckwheat was thrashed with a flail, it had to be dry, you know. So they got so nobody, at the time that I quit, there wasn't a flail used, probably it all around the machine, the thrashing machine, you see, run through the thrashing machine. They could take buckwheat and run it through the thrashing machine and get the kernel off, but it isn't too dry. And for that reason, we didn't get as nice buckwheat to grind as we did when the thrash with the flail, so then it had to be dry.
Oh, yeah. We have a number of flails in our museum.
Have you? I love wish. There was a couple up here at the barn, and I ought to save one.
We have one of them. It has a very nice wooden cap there for the swivels around.
Yeah.
Oh, they did a nice job of cutting that out.
Yeah.
Of course, some of them are a little rougher, but this person must have taken a lot of care to do that. I suppose you've seen them flailing plenty of times.
Yes.
And it had to be perfectly dry then. So they'd let it stand out in the field in the shop.
Yeah, in the sun, yeah.
And then bring it into the barn and on the barn floor, was that it?
Yeah.
Was there much of a knack to doing the flailing?
No. I used to help my father a little bit once in a while, not very much, but a little. I never got so I could tool, you know, could thrash and flail together, one after the other.
Mm-hmm.
And then three can, if they understand it. I never get that. That's pretty quick music, yeah.
No, but you did it with the two of you and your father, is that right?
Yeah.
Did you ever hear it? I should think you had to watch so you don't get hit in the head with that stick.
Oh, no,
you should
hold my leg.
The staff is probably along the broomstick, isn't it?
Yeah. Neighbors come in to help in the flailing? Or
oh, lots of times, yeah.
I see.
And the weather was just right, so the buckwheat got dry and ready to thrash, so they get together and help lots of times.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my father had a flail he made himself in November that he never let anybody use it. He always used himself.
Oh, yes.
And as you say, the way it turned out, I had a swivel there. It was a nice job. And then they put the staff to it on the where he held it was octagon shape.
Oh.
And then just rounded up as it went up towards the...
Was he pretty skillful at the carving things out of wood?
Quite a lot, yeah.
Did he make just scoops and things like...
Make wheelbarrows and hand sleds.
Uh-huh. Was he a farmer?
Yeah, he was a farmer. Oh, very nice farmer. His father come here from the Harry County and took up the possession of ours. He got it for two possessions some way. A lot of 60 acres up Lummis Grove, and come in there and put up a log house. Noble and I put up a log house, and we went to making shingles. A dollar a bunch, I think, he sold them for. Shaved them out, you know. Shingle shaved.
Yeah. We have a pro, and we also have the horse.
Did you have the horse?
Yeah. Yeah, but I'll tell you, that one, it's an old one. It was made under the directions of Mike Todd, you know, this ranger, bear hunter from Margaretville. He spent quite a bit of time with us, and he specified how it was to be made because he remembered. And so it's we have it for shaving shingles.
He did have an old one, of course, but...
Yeah, a rotten old one that wasn't complete. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
then your sister,
Charles up the wall and grandson.
Well, he has it with that? Oh, I've forgotten.
You haven't got the drawing, Mark, that they use for making the shingles.
Yeah, we have some of those, too.
Have you?
I'll tell you, I guess they use the same kind. A lot of people up our way made hoops. There was a lot of hoop shaving.
Yeah.
So, as a matter of fact, one of the men that came to the festival this year came with one that was, handmade.
Yeah.
You were saying your father started out making shingles. How long did he stay at that?
That was his grandfather.
Oh, your grandfather.
Grandfather,
I see. What was his name?
John.
Uh-huh.
John McGraw.
And then did he make shingles all his life there? Or did he?
No. Let's see. They left there and went on Carl Hill, bought a farm. I don't know anything about what date that was. But most of the children they had fiddles, and most of them was pretty well grown up when he moved off.
Uh-huh.
Well, some of them, when they went there, was able to work.
And then your father took a farm, did he?
Then the grandfather. Yeah, my father got married and went a farm for himself.
Uh-huh. And how did you get into the milling?
Well, I got married and didn't have a job. But I knew this man that owned the mill here, and I was telling him one day that I got to get a job. I worked a little around the carpenter work and different things, and I worked here with him and helped put the addition on the mill, cousin and I.
Mm-hmm.
And we had friends with him, and I was telling him one day, I told him, Barry, I've got to get a job somewhere. He said, I'll give you a job.
Mm-hmm.
He said, what you doing? Well, he says, my brother is going to quit, and he's driving the team, my team, and drawing peace and deposit to Canada. And he said, I'll give you the job of driving the team.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to driving the team and drew a feed the rest of that summer from July on to the
next
year.
Yeah,
just about a year, I guess. And then the man that owned the mill, he failed. And he couldn't pay his bills, and they took the mill back, and the deposit milling company had a claim on the mill. They took the mill over,
mm-hmm.
And they hired me to run it, see? That's the way it comes to.
Oh, yeah.
Then I run the mill for, I don't know how long. And the milling company was going to reorganize. One man was going out and they were going to reorganize. And they were going to sell this mill at Cannonville. And one of the men had a son, Gurdon Smith, now in Binghamton. He says, why don't you buy that mill, Dayton? I says, I have nothing much to buy with. But he says, Dad will give you all the chance you want. He says, we'll furnish you the feed, and you can sell on a commission, or you can buy the feed of us and sell, and set your own price. So that's what I've done. And Don hit the story a little bit. This Gurdon Smith was in the mill down there, and he said, when you catch me up to buy it, he had a brother, Kenneth Smith. With Kenneth Smith, I was alone. No, Kenneth was with
him.
He had a brother named Kenneth. Kenneth says, I'll go in with you. Said, we'll buy it together. And that's what he done. And he came up there and we inventoried the stuff that was in the mail. And we bought it together. And the bank always loaned us all the money we wanted. And I bought him out, Pliner. He went in the winter chair business down in Florida. And I bought him out, and he went down there. And that's the best part of my life.
You like that work?
Yeah.
How many years did you have the mill?
I don't know. Well, I got better. I went to the hospital and I got better. Then I bought the hardware up there. Trying to get free sit down in that car. Well, after I got started a little bit in the mill business, got a little ahead, I went to. Is that some of you folks?
Oh, she thought she had lost something.
I didn't remember taking my purse. We were in a restaurant, and I didn't remember taking it.
She thought she had left the purse somewhere.
And it just saw another. It's out on the floor.
I went to buy a man with a carload, and then I made some money after that. Used to be. Just be kind of trading out of town, watch the market, tell them to buy.
You'd buy the grain by the carload?
Yeah.
And then you would grind it and
grind
sell it.
Yeah.
Well, I see, and then sell it by the bag.
Yeah.
You had to watch the market and buy when it was low,
that's
huh?
That's right. That's right. Kind of fun. We used to get stuck sometime before.
Yeah.
I remember one year that went along in the summer, grain went down, and the flour was bringing a good price, and the Western mills was making the flour all they could, and they're getting filled up pretty well, the bran and the middlings, you know, and mixed feeds. And it was offered at pretty low price. And I bought, you could buy then on future payments, see, future, you could buy, we say in May you could buy for September shipments, or you could take for July shipments, or any month you want to. But of course, they was anxious to get rid of it, and they was offering it low, see, and for prompt shipments. And I had all I could store here, And I also had a storeroom at Deposit that'd hold about a carload and a carload and a half of his stuff. And I was all filled up here with sack stuff, brand and Midlands. I bought it for around $18-$20 a ton and was holding it. And I says, I'm afraid to buy for much future shipment. So I started with a man at Deposit that was in the feed business in the another, not the milling company, but another store down there. And he was pretty good buyer. He generally didn't get stuff much. I asked him, I said, I've got all the stuff I can store, and that I ought to buy those for future shipment. Well, he says, you lose all of it, you can't lose much.
Mm-hmm.
He says, $20 a ton for bran. And so I came right home and I called up Buffalo and I ordered another bran.
Yeah.
And I kept buying along, so, and I watched the market. And the market commenced to go up long in January. And it went up. And I said to myself, I've followed the market down long enough, now I'm going to follow it up. So I followed up, and that winter I was selling brand, middling and mixed feed. I was selling it for $40 and $50 a ton.
Huh. Yeah, took a little nerve to do it, but it was. The farmers around here, would any of them sell you the grain, or would they just bring it here to be ground?
They'd bring it here to be ground, no. They didn't raise enough to sell to mount that thing.
Uh-huh.
You could buy a little buckwheat in the fall, some, but not very much.
Uh-huh. They kept the mill pretty busy, though.
Yeah.
They? Really?
I
go that late at night, then start up there
in
the morning again, huh?
Well,
that meant that there was always a line of wagons here, I guess, huh?
Oh, no, but they'd leave their bricks here.
Oh, they'd leave it here.
Yeah.
I see. When you first started, were there many oxen in the country?
Many oxen?
Yeah.
No, very scarce.
They were very,
very
scarce when you started.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember one man that always bought buckwheat and prep quick down here. His name was Paul, Mac Paul. And he always had these long cotton bags like we used to see, don't see them now. We see sacks now.
Two bushels, weren't they?
Two bushel bags.
Yeah, I remember them,
cotton. And he'd always wash nice plate and feed a lot. He'd bring a whole load of buckwheat down there and leave it in the back home and come after the week whenever I could get it ready. You'd say, can you get it ready such time? Yeah, I'd turn it down and get it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd sell that fellow, you know.
To his neighbors and around there?
I think he used to take a lot out of it old Skidney Center.
I see.
Every fall, you'd see him down with a load of buckwheat,
mm-hmm.
and then he'd bring it back. You must wash them every year.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the mill?
Yeah, this is the mill. But the old millstones aren't in there anymore, are they?
No. See, where did they went down to Connecticut or New Jersey? I sold them when I scrapped stuff in the mill. So later on, we didn't grind feed with the millstone. We ground that in the drinking mill.
Mm-hmm.
So but we always down the best food. And I used to make, I wish you had a millstone now so I could make. I used to take wheat, grind wheat for Graham, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked out the coarse part, which would be, well, finer than Brian would be, you know. Mm-hmm. But made delicious breakfast food.
Mm-hmm.
That wheat, you get some of the Brian with it.
They don't have small mills anymore, do they?
There are a few
around.
Really? Yeah. A few small mills around. And just put it right here, it'll catch you.
I was down there all alone when Mr. Orland came down, a friend of ours, and he got there alone with two of them. And he put his feet down in his car, and he said, will your customer discharge that? Well, I said, did he didn't trust you? He took his pocketbook out and paid me. Now, he knew he was plaguing me, you know. I never said a word, not just the money, you know, he's always plastic, you know. That is one of the funny things that happened when I was down there.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my, I was plaguing. He said, look at me, I'm the one who just, I think he asked me anyway to see what I say.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that thing down there, they could remind me.
Well, as I say, maybe if you can remember.
Had a lot of fun riding downhill that way. Then it had a big, like a butterfly. It was brown. And you get 2-3 hours into that. And that was just curvy, right around and around and around and around. You never knew which way you was going. You hit a piece of grass. If you was going around this way, you hit a piece of grass and you go around the other way. And, oh, it just makes you so dizzy. When you got down foot in the hill, you couldn't get out. Then finally, one day, we hit a stone. And that thing broke right in 4 pieces. And we went down over the hill.
Did you ever go bear hunting with your father?
No, I never went bear hunting. I see. though. I've seen him out wild. I wasn't very old when I seen the first bear. Out in the woods. I was, well, about halfway between Michael Hill, the place where we owned, and Sundown. And it's very steep. It comes right down to Lowe's Corners. And my father had a woodlot in there, and of course I knew this woodlot real well because I'd been in there a lot with him. And I was going down through there, and there's blackberries. Oh, what blackberries. They used to grow way over top of your head, and they'd be parts of blackberries on one stem. And I heard a noise as I was going down through this place, and I looked up, and there stood a bear, just a little ways away from me. It stood right up on his hind feet, and he had one paw up over the bush and holding it down, eating off from it with his mouth. And so my mother always said, if you see anything like that, never run. Just walk right on as though nothing ever happened. So I walked along as best I could, quietly, and when I got out of sight, then I said, like, do your duty, and I hopped over. That I didn't start working because I was the oldest of a family of 11 children, and from the time I can remember I had a baby in my arms to take care of, rocking the chair before I could lift them, and we always had a rocking chair, and that rocking chair had two poles, and there the babies were kept, and when I was too young to handle them, I rocked him in his chair, and thereby helping my mother while she done her work.
Can you people hear?
Oh, when I was small, I remember he was sort of a person that was feared in the neighborhood because many times when he had been in the neighborhood, things disappeared. Of course, they didn't have any proof of just where they went, but they had an idea that they went with Pete Markle. I heard him say, I heard this said of him, that one time he was out in a place, and he was going along a road, and there was turkeys roosting along the road, and he said he got almost by, and then one beckoned to him, and he said he couldn't stand that, because he knew the poor bird wanted to go along, so he stopped, picked him up, and took him along.
Would you tell us some of those ghost stories?
Oh, I remember one that was a fellow that lived up on the place where we lived on Michaelwhite Hill, and he was going out to see his girl, and he had a nice buggy and a horse, nice horse, and so he was considered a real sport, and he would go home just about such a time every night, and his usual thing, he'd been to the saloon and had a few drinks, and he'd seen a ghost. It would come up out of my grandfather's field and go into another field, and he couldn't understand what that was, so he told different ones about seeing this ghost, so they thought, well, they'd investigate and see what it was, and there my grandfather had this buck sheep, and he was a big fall, and the next door neighbor had a piece of buckwheat, and this buck sheep every night would go up through there and jump over this wall and walk the wall for a ways. Then he would jump down into this field of buckwheat. And there he'd have a feast. And that was a ghost.
Would you tell us about how those treadmills were used that we saw, that we have in the exhibit?
They were all used with an up and down churn. A churn that had a dasher with a long handle that pulled up and down. And used with a dog, some people used them with a sheep too, and sometimes children could use them, and they used them to churn with. It was real economical because the elder people could go right on with their work. And a small child could churn, and or even the dog. We had a dog always to churn, that is, most always, once in a while us children had to do it. But the usual thing, we had a dog, and that dog would come when he heard us getting the machine ready, the churn ready, and he'd just wait. And then when he'd get on, he'd finish his churn, he was ready for his drink of buttermilk. He'd wait around until he got that. When he got his drink of buttermilk, he was off. He was always going to churn just for a drink of buttermilk.
Did you used to have to go out in the field after the cows at night?
Yes.